to the KUNM call-in show. I'm your host, Gwyneth Doland. New Mexicans were shocked when Secretary of State Diana Duran was charged with 64 counts of fraud, embezzlement, money laundering, and campaign finance violations on August 28th. The charges are apparently related to what the state attorney general said was a pattern of transferring campaign contributions to her personal bank accounts and withdrawing the money at casinos across the state. Now, Duran's lawyers say those charges are sensational and misleading, and they say they're politically motivated, and they will vigorously fight this selective prosecution. This week, Governor Susana Martinez, who had long been a political ally of Duran's, said if the charges are true, Duran should resign. She has not resigned, and she hasn't been back to work since the charges were made public 2 weeks ago. So what happens now? Will she resign, or will lawmakers go through with their threat of impeachment? Is this a politically motivated prosecution by an ambitious Democratic attorney general? Or is it more evidence that New Mexico needs to do more to ensure ethics and accountability from its government? Joining us today is an esteemed panel of political observers. First, we'll be talking with Christine Sierra, an emeritus professor of political science at the University of New Mexico. Welcome back, Dr. Sierra.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
And on the phone, we have Steve Terrell, a political reporter and columnist for the Santa Fe New Mexican. Good morning, Steve.
Good morning.
So I want to start with you. You're up there at the state capitol, and the Secretary of State has her office in the annex there. You are at the nexus of this thing. Why do you think these charges are so surprising to so many people? Is it in part because Duran ran her campaign as a reform candidate?
Yeah, that's partly because of it. Basically, no one suspected that this kind of thing would happen. This kind of thing would be in the cards with her. People have known her for years up here. She was a state senator for years and years, and she's just won her second term for Secretary of State. And while lots of people, Democrats have disagreed with her policy, especially about voter ID and that type of thing, no one's really questioned her personal honesty or anything until now. That's one reason it was such a big shock.
And, I should say that she had a lot of endorsements from Democrats when she ran because the office had been kind of mired in scandal. Your paper, the Santa Fe New Mexican, the editorial page leans a little left, and they endorsed her.
Yeah, that was back in 2010. Our county clerk at the time, Valerie Espinosa, is now on the PRC. She endorsed her. I think there were like six Democratic county clerks who endorsed her back in 2010. There seemed to be so many problems in Mary Herrera's office back when she was Secretary of State that's one thing that propelled her to victory that year.
Now, these crimes she's accused of, the messing with the campaign finance reports and moving the money around, really, it's not that much money. It's like $13,000. And, there are some people who are like, it's just not that big of a deal. It's not that much money.
Well, when you have the person who's responsible for overseeing campaign finance reports and enforcing election laws, that's what makes it a bigger deal.
Yeah, that's a really big job. Professor, I want to come to you. It's not the way that every state does it, that an elected official is the one who's in charge of overseeing campaign finance reporting and overseeing elections and some ethics complaints. Sometimes those are farmed out to different places. In your opinion, is there a problem or a conflict with having an elected official oversee all this political stuff?
Well, it does depend on state law and how we look at the administration of elections. We've got what we've got, and the job is big, but there are reform efforts across the states, including New Mexico, to try to do certain kinds of processes, not only election administration, which means how we look over, we have somebody oversee the running of elections, the whole process, voter registration, lobbyist registration, and so on, that we have the one person. But there are reform efforts to try to professionalize the process and have it less partisan, less driven by partisan politics, with the idea that we could achieve fairness, equality, a smoother functioning of state government and these processes with some nonpartisan professional commission. I should say that states are also looking at the difficulties of political processes with regards to redistricting, for example. And so there are states that are trying to look at setting up commissions to draw those district lines to get us out of that hyper-partisan, mired-down politics that sometimes we're confronting. We're certainly seeing that at the federal level.
We also have in the studio with us today Janice Arnold-Jones, a former Republican state representative and transparency advocate. Good morning, Janice.
Good morning, Gwenna.
You know, Dr. Sierra just mentioned these reform efforts, and you were up there for some of these debates. We've been talking about this stuff in our state legislature for a long time. There have been folks saying, you know, we need an independent election commission and an independent ethics commission to oversee this stuff in an elected official. But in your opinion, would spreading out these duties to, you know, a nonpartisan or bipartisan group of people nominated from all over the place, would that add much needed oversight and accountability to the system, or would it just be like big government mess?
Well, our history would say that it would just add to the layers and layers of government. And at the end of the day, what we're talking about with Secretary Duran is personal accountability. And at, you know, none of us saw this coming. So how do you protect against that? You could even have a terrific commission, and the person elected to run the commission could fall into what appears to be a gambling problem.
Well, so, you know, the folks at Common Cause, for example, say that our campaign finance computer system, which is better than it has been. I'm not going to say it's perfect because I look at it all the time. It's better than it has been in the past. But our system, whatever it is, should be able to put up a red flag when, as we saw with Duran, a company reports, someone reports that they donated money to a candidate, but then the candidate doesn't report that they got it. And I think we just had another Democrat accused of this the other day. Now I can't remember who, but you know, this
Mo Maestas.
Mo Maestas, that's who it was. Come on.
So going back several generations in terms of the Secretary of State's office, don't even get me going on the computer systems, because there's no excuse for this. And the decisions made at the top level by people who are ignorant of systems and data is profound. But yes, you could integrate the databases so that when there is an input and it's looking for a match, that it actually could flag that. Do we have that software in place and have we purchased it? No.
Yeah, I'm not even sure it exists, honestly, but it just seems like something. It's
but it exists
hard,
elsewhere.
Right? Yeah.
And so why is it not applied here? Yes, it exists elsewhere.
Folks, we want to talk. We want to hear what you think about this. Should an elected official oversee campaign finance reports and elections? Or should we have an independent commission do each of those things? Or should we not change the whole system just because of one example of personal accountability did not fail? Call us now. Our number is 277-5866 here in Albuquerque. That's 277-5866. Toll free, 877-899-5866. Or you can send your comment or question in an email to callinshow@kunm.org. So, Dr. Sierra, you have something.
Well, I just want to reinforce what my colleague here said about the technology. I think what we're also witnessing is the change, the rapid change of these offices and the demands. And so what we're looking at, I think, is a higher threshold to meet in qualifications of who's going to be put in these jobs. And now we really should be looking at the way in which people are capable of understanding data systems, databases, technological innovations, and being able to analyze things. And so it's not just kind of overseeing behavior of county clerks and so on. It really is understanding a high-level systems and complicated technological process.
I mean, there's a lot of stuff, honestly, that still happens at the Secretary of State's office on paper. Those, Janice, you filled these out, those financial disclosure forms. They exist only at these as these scanned PDFs. It's ridiculous. She can't even act, and now she doesn't even have them online.
And it was really funny because I used to pitch a fit about being able to fill mine out electronically. I said, send that form to me. But then again, you know, and I don't want to scare you, but when I was first elected in 2003, my legislative assistant was not allowed to have Excel on her computer.
I'm sorry.
And I said, I'm sorry, but that's how I work. I'm looking at data. I need a tool. And so it is an attitude at the state legislature. And I was hoping over the last 5 years that attitude would change. But if you do not elect people who understand that data integration, data aggregation, and data security is all about your personal identity, and where is it more important than in voter registration and campaigns?
Let's take a call right now from Cynthia in Santa Fe, who does not like the idea of having the same person oversee these things. Cynthia, welcome to the show.
Yes, I think transparency is really important. And, you know, previous behavior of this already happening, why trust it again? So, you know, it's easy to separate out the roles and have more oversight. So don't do it again. That's my impression.
Thank you, Cynthia. Thanks. Steve Terrell, you know, sure, it's easy to separate out these roles, but on a practical level, some of these are constitutionally required. I mean, how can you see this actually happening? These ideas about having these different commissions, they failed before. Do you think there's any chance that they would happen now?
I don't know. I'm not that optimistic. Have to be a constitutional amendment, so it wouldn't even have to go to the governor. But in the past, they've been, if you look at the Ethics Commission idea, which has been, I think Common Cause said there's been 50 Ethics Commission bills since in the last 10 years, and none of them have gotten very far. Everybody's shocked and outraged by these charges and everything, but by the time the legislature rolls in, it's kind of like there's always this kind of pressure just to do things as usual.
Well, the other side of this issue is within the Secretary of State's office, they have some professional staff, the director of the Bureau of Elections, and the current one, I have no quibbles with. Bobby Scherer, who was the previous one, did an excellent job. And Ken Ortiz is a consummate state professional.
He's the chief of staff in the office there.
And you know what? When he was at Motor Vehicles, I mean, there truly are people who do a terrific job. So would it help to divide this out? And don't forget that the Secretary of State is the third in line for running the state.
I should also mention, though, that Bureau of Elections job is a political appointment, and it has been occupied briefly by people who, in the past, Democrats and Republicans, who people thought were too partisan to do that job. Let's quickly go to Jill in Albuquerque. Jill, what is your comment about this situation at the Secretary of State's office?
Well, I've lived in Albuquerque 23 years. I've never seen such a comedy of errors year after year. Transparency is just a word, and I don't think anybody adheres to it, even on the national level. But I just want to tell the panel, we made the front page of the New York Times yesterday with a picture of Susana Martinez, and the article was not actually that factual. They made it. All of this upset is due to trying to attack Susana Martinez. Well, it's not about that. And I care deeply, but we are the second worst educational system in the country behind Mississippi. So if you have a bunch of people who aren't educated and don't understand what voting means and who the candidates are and what the platforms and how important it is, I mean, we are reaping what we've sown. And Diana Duran is just one of the long line of inept, non-functional people that can't do their jobs. So, you know, where do you start to reform this? And that's all I have to say.
Jill, I hear you. That frustration is out there, and it is real. So thank you for expressing it. Professor?
Well, I just wanted to say that this is really a very unfortunate situation and very disappointing in a number of ways. I study elected officials across the country, and I look at especially the presence of women and women of color. And in this case, we have one individual who seems to have really fallen very far off a very important office. And it will draw national attention. For one thing, women and women of color still are very underrepresented in certainly in statewide office. I checked with the data from the Center for American Women in Politics. Overall, there are 14 secretaries of state, 7 Democrats and 7 Republicans. Only 2 are Hispanic women. One is Diana Duran. The other is Nelly Gorbea, a Democrat from Rhode Island. In terms of Latinas in statewide offices across the country, there are only 4. In addition to those 2 secretaries of state, it's Governor Martinez and a Lieutenant Governor Evelyn Sanguinetti, a Republican from Illinois. So when you have such small numbers in such important positions, the disappointment of seeing one person not be able to deliver in terms of competence and integrity and so on, it's quite disappointing and frustrating.
I'd like to jump in here because this is not really about professionalism in the ability to do the job. There were things that this office needed to do that Secretary Diana Duran has led the way and it's gotten it done. And when I look at what happened under the previous administration, as you know, we were not able to purge or clean the voter rolls for years because the previous administration didn't do the job. It was a big deal. That was done. The charges in this case are really about a personal fall from grace. It appears to me that this truly is a gambling problem, and there were some personal choices, but it really didn't have anything to do with her ability to do the job in office.
That's a good point. And listeners, we want to hear from you, too. So do you think that an elected official should be the one in charge of enforcing campaign finance laws? Yes, because they're perfectly capable and personal accountability should be enough to keep them straight. Or no, we need institutional separations there. Let us know what you think. Call us now at 277-5866 here in Albuquerque. That's 277-5866. Or toll free, 877-899-5866. You can also post your comments and questions to our Facebook page. Look for KUNM Radio. We'll be right back.
People donate all kinds of vehicles to KUNM. RVs, motorcycles, scooters, lawn tractors, and wrecked cars. Recently, one listener donated 2 1956 Chevys, 10 years older than KUNM itself. We appreciate them all, but the one that made everyone smile around here was a 1940 manure spreader. Find out if the vehicle you have to donate can fertilize KUNM and help us grow. Call 888-KUNM-CAR. That's 888-586-6227.
Join me for the Well Woman Show on Friday at 8 a.m. on KUNM 89.9 FM. I'm your host, Giovanna Rossi, and I'll be interviewing women executives, leaders, and entrepreneurs and giving advice that supports you to reveal the awesome woman you really are. Tune in to the Well Woman Show this Friday at 8 a.m. on KUNM.
Welcome back to the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm your host, Gwyneth Doland. We're talking about corruption charges against Secretary of State Diana Duran and what the state needs to do to clean them up if they turn out to be true. We are joined today by Steve Terrell, political reporter and columnist for the Santa Fe New Mexican, Dr. Christine Sieta, an emeritus professor of political science at UNM, Janice Arnold-Jones, a former Republican state representative and transparency advocate. And joining us now on the phone is Walt Rubel, the regional opinion page editor at the Las Cruces Sun News. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, thank you.
Walt, Diana Duran is from Tularosa. It's a village of about 300 people in southern New Mexico, not so far from Alamogordo and Las Cruces. You've been at the paper for a long time, and you've been following her since her days in the legislature 2 decades ago.
Right.
Before all of this news broke, how would you have described Diana Duran?
Honest and competent. And I know that sounds strange now, but This, for our editorial board, when she ran in this last election against Maggie Louise Oliver, was a very difficult choice for us because there were some things that Diana Duran had done in terms of voter fraud that we thought was a little bit of grandstanding. But we had no questions about her competency, and beyond that, we had no question about her honesty. And that had been a department or the Secretary of State before her had a lot of questions in that regard, and they were Democrats, and her being a Republican, I think she benefited by that. And so, for me at least, and I've done this long enough to know that reporters don't ever really get to know the people, who we're covering, and I think that's especially true with political reporters. But given that, this still came as a big surprise to me. You hear whisperings and you hear rumors about a lot of different people when you're working up in Santa Fe, and I just never heard any of that about her.
Me either. And, a couple of people I've talked to in the past 2 weeks who did know her better than reporters who kind of keep our distance,
right,
said they knew she liked to go to the casinos but just never would have imagined this. How are folks down there on her home turf reacting to this, Walt?
I think the same as everybody else. I think there is some anger just because of what you guys have been talking about. Here we go again. Here's another one. But beyond that, I think there's some sadness because I think people down here like Diana Duran. They know her, and they I think a lot of people are still waiting to hear an explanation, and are hoping that even against the evidence that maybe they're. There is a reason for this, but so far that hasn't come.
Walt, back in February, there was a little red flag that caught my eye, and I've been doing some work for a report on integrity in state systems. So I noticed when your colleague Dan Schwartz at the Farmington Daily Times, he was doing some campaign finance reporting like we all do, looking at one of his local candidates up there. And he dug into his reports and found that the guy owed like $20,000 in fines over a 5-year period, and he had never paid a dime. And Schwartz was like, how does this work? This is kind of crazy. And when he took a bigger look, he looked at all of the candidates in the primary and general elections in 2012 and 2014, and he found that Duran hardly ever collected any of those fines, like 4% of the time. Did you see that story?
I did, and we ran that story, and we actually wrote an editorial urging her to because you're right, it seemed like a systematic effort. And on top of that, we were overly sensitive to that maybe down here because Mary Jane Garcia, a long-term senator from this area, lost her seat because of a campaign finance issue that was brought up right before the election that I thought Diana Duran handled it properly. I mean, I thought there were some legitimate issues there, but that was a case where she did issue a fine, and it did, I think, cost Mary Jane Garcia her seat. So there's a lot of discretion there that the Secretary of State has, and I think that story pointed out that she used it, that there wasn't like a schedule where everybody who committed this crime got, she used an awful lot of discretion, and in an awful lot of cases there was no penalty at all.
The Secretary of State has long said that her focus is on education and not enforcement, and so did previous secretaries also. Previous attorney generals have also said their focus was on education, not enforcement. Janice, I'm looking at you because I'm talking about enforcement of open records and open government laws where there have been very few fines levied. And the thing is, the law doesn't require the Secretary of State to fine people or to collect that money. It allows her to, but it doesn't require her to. Now, Attorney General Hector Baldetis has recommended that there be mandatory fines. Callers, we want to know if you think there should be mandatory fines or if there should be some discretion in that office. Meanwhile, let's hear from Steve in Albuquerque. Steve, you like technologies. Is that right?
That's absolutely right. Mexico has been lagging compared to other states across the United States. This is a simple fix that we could be putting within our systems to track issues such as this and let the people know ahead of time that something like this occurs. This is a larger symptom of us not being able to go into the 21st century and be able to say, hey, we have efficiency systems, we have full transparency, and these checks that we have in place, they're just not working. That's an obvious case here with the Secretary.
Thank you for that, Steve. We also have an email comment here from Chris who says, New Mexicans have to embrace the idea of having a functional government. I'm embracing. With independent commissions, though, she says, greater oversight, improved technology. She says a part-time volunteer government isn't sufficient. Oh, let's go back and have that fight, Janice. Let's talk about paying lawmakers and making them full-time. Here's another thing that's not going to happen anytime soon.
But the very concept of oversight, I believe, is lacking in our state. You know, having sat on several committees called the Oversight Committee that had absolutely no authority. And when we look at oversight, so I think one of the things that bothers people is people are doing financial disclosure reports and they're putting in campaign finance reports, but nobody's looking at them.
Yeah, I just did this report for the Center for Public Integrity in which I had to ask people, you know, whether these forms were filled out properly. And I couldn't find people who'd ever looked at them.
Yes.
But, you know, in terms of campaign finance reports, Steve Terrell at the New Mexican, you look at these all the time, right?
Yeah.
And so what do you think of the idea? I mean, and you and I know, anyone who's ever looked up these things knows that, well, present company accepted, that the forms are often not filled out properly or completely. They're very vague. You know, I mean, sometimes you look at a campaign finance report and it's like $13,000 for stuff and things and whatnot is basically what it says in there. What do you think of the idea that there be mandatory fines, Steve?
Well, that's a good idea. But again, there's what every Secretary of State since I've been covering state government has said, you know, you find something kind of weird in campaign, you know, there's no enforcement. There's no staff for enforcement, and that takes money. And there doesn't seem to be any willingness of the legislature to, you know, create more people to oversee it or anything. It's just one of these things. They go, well, that's just how it is, and that's how it's going to be.
Well, and there's an inherent conflict of interest
there. That might be good, but again, you have to have fine. You know, you have to have people like me and Walt looking at these things, and other people. Mainly opponents probably would look at that, too, on a voluntary basis. But, yeah, I think mandatory fines is a good idea. But, again, you have to have somebody to enforce it.
Professor, do you think that mandatory fines would increase compliance with the rules?
Someone still has to observe and go beyond observe, but to enforce. And so there needs to be an enforcement mechanism. There needs to be systems of accountability. I just wanted to add that in addition to these elected officials, part of the importance of our democratic process is there are interest groups. In this case, nonprofit, nonpartisan groups that also try to serve as watchdogs over our democratic process. And while they might be very stressed, underfunded, overworked, and so on, we do have them. And Common Cause, League of Women Voters, New Mexico Foundation for Open Government are just some that come to mind. If people want to assist, they could also join in that kind of political participation and help these groups in doing the work that they want to do to try to serve the interests of the state and not just a political party.
So, Gwyneth, I think some of your listeners may be wondering why there has been so little enforcement. And having sat through this, I think it was set up so that there was always an out for the elected. But with regard to campaign finance reports in particular, the fact that they are now online and searchable, you can't imagine what a fight that was. But the reality is, in such a large state with poor telecommunications, that there was a legitimate excuse that I couldn't get on the system, and I couldn't file my report.
And, you know, we have seen, I think, when Duran accused Balderas of filing some reports late, one of the things that came out of that was, oh, well, I did file one late because the system is down, and your office said that was okay, so there was no fine. Walt, down there in Las Cruces, what do you think about the idea that the Attorney General has put forward about mandatory fines?
I think it's something that's worth looking at. I do think that Steve's right, and the other people who have talked about it, that there are issues and glitches with the system, and there are times when there are legitimate reasons why people don't file on time. And it is an unpaid legislature, and I think, you know, there's the per diem and all that, but we don't want to make a situation where somebody makes an honest mistake and files a day late, and it costs them so much that, if you understand what I'm saying there. So I think that that could be done, and I think there's some balance there. I just wanted to make a quick point about what was said earlier about opposition doing a lot of the work on this. That's exactly what happened in the Mary Jane Garcia case. It was Lee Cotter's, the treasurer for Lee Cotter, who found these irregularities. And I think, unfortunately, that's what's happening is it's either the opposition or these partisan watchdog groups that are you know, doing investigative reporting. And I think all of that's great, but it doesn't replace an official investigation.
Yeah, I mean, and part of that problem is, and I know we've talked about this before, but Steve, you're up there in the state capitol. How many reporters are in the media room there now, full-time?
Oh, full-time? not very many myself. And Rob from New Mexico Watchdog, which is a conservative paper, and he didn't actually report on state government anymore. He's basically he's their national energy reporter. So full time, you know, the journal's right nearby, and they cover the Capitol too, of course. But
10 years ago,
come in. But
20
but,
years ago, that room was really full.
Well, you know, years ago, I've been I was there 15 up there. Years, and yeah, Walt was there. We were roommates up there, but. Yeah, but during when the session's not in, it's never been that full. The journal never stays there during the interim because their office is, you know, a couple blocks away.
But we do have smaller staffs at the New Mexican, at the Journal, at the Sun News. We have fewer eyeballs from the media who are able to look at this stuff, and that I think is part of the problem. We all say we wish we were looking at this stuff more often, but there are fewer of us, and we're doing more stuff. We have a Twitter comment here from Katie. She says, many people's lives have been destroyed by gambling addiction. Diana Duran needs help, and she needs to resign. I think we've all been, you know, having heavy hearts about that lately. Let's take a call here from Eric in Albuquerque. Eric, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you. The comment I wanted to make is just a quick couple of things, and then I'll listen. First of all, this is a culture of corruption. And when you have a lack of technology which will allow you to kind of have that transparency, then corruption is made much easier on that end. And a lot of times when you talk about things like mandatory fines and stuff like that, you're basically saying holding people accountable regardless of what's going on. I don't buy the excuse that, oh, you know, telecommunications in New Mexico is poor. I think that where there's a will, there's a way. If you want to file your reports, you will definitely file them. But when you're leaving it up to the discretion of somebody that doesn't have the accountability or doesn't have the oversight to actually go in and exact their job, which is to make sure that, you know, campaign financing or something is done correctly, or that they're not themselves abusing the system for a gambling reason or something like that, then you have that. And no one here on the phone could disagree with the fact that in New Mexico, corruption has been part of the political fabric for a long time. So, you know, unless you're willing to clean house or some folks who are part of that corruptive process who would be threatened by that particular technology are somehow going to change their tune, then we have an issue. And one last comment I want to make is that there are more women voters in New Mexico of voting age than there are men. So when you talk about uninformed voters, a lot of New Mexico is uninformed, but I think that it is pretty much up to women to make any changes politically in the United States that is necessary, and that's where the real power center lies. I just don't know that women know that as a collective body. And I'll hang up and listen to.
Thanks, Eric. I'll let the ladies know that they need to get out there. I'll let them all know. Janice?
Well, excellent points on this call. One of the things that we might look at, and when you say a culture of corruption, or is it a culture of ignorance? When I read the election code, it said very clearly, you could not write down and stuff and such. It very clearly says that you had to enumerate. Well, do we not know what enumerate means? And so perhaps.
But if you never get in trouble for just filling out these forms totally haphazardly and vaguely, then why would anyone bother to follow the law?
Well, exactly. So one, you've got to have somebody who actually looks at it. But the other side, with the legislature in particular, the Legislative Counsel Service is in charge of ethics training. I know some people think that's funny, but yes, they do. and the expectation, the media needs to talk about the expectation of how you file your report. I got a check in. I spent money in this arena on these things that are allowable under the election law, and it needs to be enumerated. It's a burden on the candidate, but that's how it is.
Folks, let's take a really quick break. We've been talking about the charges against Secretary of State Diana Duran and her mandate and her ability to enforce campaign finance laws. Should there be mandatory fines? Should the media be doing more? Should outside groups be taking more? Should we demand more accountability from candidates, donors, and lobbyists who file their reports late or incomplete? We want to know what you think. So call us. The number is 277-5866 here in Albuquerque. That's 277-5866. Or you can call toll-free 877-899-5866. You can tweet to us at KUNM News, and we will be right back.
Bring four or more from your group to answer phones during our fundraiser starting October 17th and get a gift certificate toward announcements on KUNM. Video training provided. Call now to reserve a shift, 277-4516.
On the next American Radio Works documentary,
I think a lot of schools are very focused on producing a number.
Some say there is too much test prep in public schools and not enough focus on things like
courage, self-discipline, respect, perseverance.
Character is something that stays with you throughout life.
But how can character be taught? Listen for Beyond the Blackboard from APM.
Sunday morning at 11 on 89.9 KUNM.
Welcome back to the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm Gwyneth Doland, and I am here with Steve Terrell, a political reporter and columnist for the Santa Fe New Mexican, Dr. Christine Sierra, an emeritus professor of political science at UNM, Janice Arnold-Jones, a former Republican state representative and transparency advocate, and Walt Rubel, the regional opinion page editor at the Las Cruces Sun News. Folks, I want to talk just for a minute about the political elements of these allegations against the Secretary of State. The New York Times, a caller mentioned earlier that there was a New York Times story yesterday, and it did frame this as one in a series of events that threatens the image of the governor just as she's about to take over the head of the Republican Governors Association. And there are a lot of folks out there who are saying this is politically motivated on the part of the attorney general. You know, we saw these charges against Tax and Rev Secretary Demesia Padilla, and there are folks trying to tie the APS superintendent scandal back to Hannah Scandera, the Secretary of Education, and back to the governor. Do you think that this is a politically motivated thing? Janice, I'll go to you first.
Looking at the behavior of all, no. And the telling piece, you know, make no mistake, Hector Balteras likes to win. He's competent, but he issued It's not an indictment. However, the charges went to court, and he has been silent. If it was political, do you really think he'd be silent? He's a strong political entity. There's no doubt he's going to run for governor, but I think he says the charges stand.
Dr. Zieta?
I know Hector just casually, but I think he's doing his job. And I agree with Janice that I don't think the evidence shows that this is a partisan hunt. I just wanted to go back and make one more point. We've talked about a culture of corruption. We've talked about ignorance. There's no doubt that corruption and ignorance are problems. But I want to also kind of put on my political science teaching hat and say, part of the problem also is that we have lost touch with our duty as citizens and getting involved in civil society. That if we were to make voter participation just that much more important, if we were to make political involvement, where we were to reinforce the idea that politics is not necessarily corrupt, Politics is important. Politics is how we function in a democracy. That may be from the citizen, from the voter, all the way to the elected officers, that we could re-energize and hold ourselves accountable. But that goes at the very individual level, and we all have a role to play in that.
That's a really good point. And, you know, I teach here at UNM, too, and I think if we gave an iTunes gift card out for voting, I think we'd get a lot more. I think we'd get a lot better turnout, honestly. Steve and Walt, you know, we saw the speaker, and I found this kind of surprising. The speaker named members of an impeachment panel chaired by Representative Gail Chasey of Albuquerque and Zach Cook of Ruidoso. The other members of this commission are Sarah Maestas Barnes, Jim Dines, Kelly Fajardo, Javier Martinez, Bill Ream, Patricio Ruiloba, Tomas Salazar, and Jeff Steinborn. What do you guys think of this group?
I think it's a good group. I've seen this now, and I think Walt has too. In the last 10 years, this is the third one. That's an average every three in the third years, an impeachment committee. I think they're all conscientious people who, they really do have. I've seen this in the past. They take it seriously and drop all partisanship. There's none of the political sniping. And in the past, I've seen that. This, of course, hadn't really started yet. But I talked to Gail Chasey yesterday, and she's very insistent that leave your politics at the door. And that's how it's worked in the past. How it's worked in the past also is that the before any impeachment becomes a reality, the official being investigated resigns.
I know that Janice told me that that this show was going to be pointless because Duran would have already resigned. But
a lot of people thought that.
I did too. But you know,
I thought it was going to. It'll come Friday when I'm going to go to a concert.
We have a few calls here. Let's talk to Ronald in Albuquerque. Ronald, you think incumbents are not going to change these rules?
Hello.
Hi, Ronald.
I'm thinking that the media is the only possible hope we've got for this. Political elected folks are not going to go against a system that has gotten where they're at. You were just talking about political corruption is not endemic. It is. Think clear back to the 20s when we had the corruption around Wilson and his successor. We can't rely on the bureaucracy to do it. Notice the incompetence recently shown by the appointed superintendent of the Albuquerque school system, and then the elected superintendent gave him a stellar letter of recommendation. You guys are our only hope. And the investigative journalists have been bringing this stuff out into the open for hundreds of years, and you're our only hope to bring it to the electorate if the electorate is willing to put up with dishonesty.
Thank you. Thanks, Ronald. And, you know, subscribe to your daily newspaper today. I'll make that plug. Thank you, Ronald, for saying that it's important to us. And also, give to your public radio station. Write that check today. Let's hear from Barbara in Albuquerque. Barbara, welcome to the show.
Hi, I just want to say that however, Diana got into this trouble, if she has an addiction, it's pretty clear that it doesn't matter what kind of addiction you have. If it's bad, you're going to do anything to keep it going. And it's unfortunate. It's really sad, even for me, who's something of a partisan where Diana is concerned. But I did want to say that I heard people earlier saying that Diana was really not partisan, and I really just don't think that's true. I mean, the Democratic Party has said that they were unable to communicate with the Secretary of State's office using Democratic Party servers. They had to go to their personal emails in order to communicate with the Secretary of State's office because their servers were blocked. I don't know if that's true, but I have heard this. I've been printed, or I mean, not printed, I mean, it's been put out there as a fact.
Well, even more
her,
than
her policies about voting have tracked the national ALEC sort of
conservative platform
of trying to prevent poor, dark people from voting. And I think it's outrageous, and I think it should be said that she did try to do that, and I think it's wrong, you know, by setting certain kinds of standards about how people were going to register or how, you know, not enforcing voting access throughout the state and making it a partisan issue when it was actually the fault of poor public officials.
Barbara, thank you for that. And, you know, she brings up a really good point there, which is Diana Duran had a lot of bipartisan support when she was first elected. You know, we talked about how these newspapers endorsed her against the Democrat, and she was endorsed by some Democratic county clerks. But then there was that time in 2011 when she claimed that there was vast voter fraud in the state, really tapping into a Republican, idea about voter fraud. And she turned over more than 60,000 voter registration records to the state police for investigation. No charges ever came from it. And Democrats felt burned by that. I should say again that Duran's lawyer has said that these charges are sensational and misleading and that they'll fight them, and that the governor has said if the charges are true that she should resign. And the governor did meet with the attorney general and look over the charges and the evidence there. And Janice.
Well, I'm going to say the governor is not out forward. So, you know, that this is very serious. And I agree that, again, Diana has not had her day in court. She has not been able to tell the story. But it is odd that nothing would come to say, you know, somebody else had access to my account. And even if it was a family member who actually did this, unfortunately and fortunately, it is the elected that is responsible for the account. And you have to bear that responsibility no matter what. But I do have to take issue with, and we need to kind of ratchet back the rhetoric. It is not Alec's platform to disenfranchise people of color. That is just not true. And it just like saying that the Republican platform is that way or the Democratic platform. Let's read the stuff, people.
We have Vicki Harrison on the line from Common Cause. I think we knew that we would hear from Vicki Harrison today because we're tapping into a lot of issues that she's been working on for a while. Welcome, Vicki.
Thank you so much. This is like a little family reunion of campaign finance.
Yeah, you've got a lot of nerds on the line here.
Of all of my favorite, five people I vastly, vastly think are wonderful. I just wanted to say, I mean, there's been so many great comments this morning from the panelists and from the public. I've just been so encouraged by some of the calls you've had. You know, we've been working with the Secretary of State's office and the legislature to make the system better. All of these issues we're talking about with bad information and Janice and you talking about people not filling things out, there are a lot of simple technological things that we can do to that system. And we actually, along with the Foundation for Open Government, met with Carrie Freskes, our interim elections director, a couple of months ago, gave her a list of things that they could do. And she fabulously responded to us the next day and said, "You're right. This is great information. We've entered into a contract with the vendor to fix this." Because as Steve knows, that system used to be a lot easier to get information out of, and it isn't anymore. And I think that's, you know, really critical. And the other thing I really want to touch on, Gwyneth, is, and I get ribbed a lot for this, but the vast, vast majority of our elected officials in New Mexico are exemplary people. This is not a culture of corruption. We hear of these certain cases over and over, and we say, oh, that's just the way it is. But the truth is, and both sides of the aisle, I mean, there's some folks up there who've never voted with me on my issues for 20 years, and I still think they're fantastic. So I just don't want the public to throw their hands up and say, that's the way it is, because it really isn't. And the majority of these folks are going up there trying to do the best for their district.
You know, I am not the person who thinks that I would be saying this stuff, but I also find myself frequently in the position of defending state lawmakers. You know, people say, oh, they're all crooks, they're all idiots, they're all criminals. And I'm like, you know, you don't even know these people. But once you get to know them, they are, for the most part, people who are very, very well-intentioned.
Our state legislature, I would also add, is quite accessible to the public. And I have had just great experiences in meeting with individuals that I need to meet with, to going to committee hearings, to seeing how people are treated. And it's just become too easy and too trite to be dismissive and say, oh, all politics is corrupt, all politicians are corrupt. So I would definitely agree with Vicki that I think we have a lot to be proud of. And I don't want this discussion of one individual's fall from grace, definitely wishing her to get out of this problem. But I don't want that to be a mark against the state of New Mexico, its citizens, and its officialdom.
I will say, although all of this stuff is true, there has been historically a hostility toward things like an ethics commission or having an ethics committee that meets on any kind of regular basis. The state legislature has, over the years, designed these systems to be kind of ineffective. So, you know, as much as this stuff happens, I know exactly what's going to happen next session. Well-meaning people are going to propose all these reforms, and they are probably not going to happen. Walt, am I crazy?
You are not crazy. And on top of that, the legislature takes all, and I've seen it so many times, that they take it personally, that any kind of suggestion that we need tighter ethics laws, what, you think I'm a crook?
Yes, they do.
They do. And that is so frustrating to try to say, no, it's not about you. It's about the system. And there is just a blind spot there. I saw it when Manny Aragon, the Senate president, their leader, was indicted and sent to jail. They still would not accept the fact that there is a weakness in the system that needs to be addressed.
Let's take this last call from Sarah in Albuquerque before we wrap it up. Welcome, Sarah.
Yes, thank you for this informative show. I just want to say, you know, besides, can you hear me pretty well, by the way?
Yes, you sound great.
Okay, yes. I just want to say, you know, besides this gambling problem, you know, that I feel like Diane Duran has incompetency in her job, because did you know that we have a city election going on right now? Two polls are open. It has been open for 6 days. This is the seventh day. And we got three more weeks of early voting. And the whole thing is, where is the public service announcement from the Secretary of State
office? You know, Sarah, I should say that although the Secretary of State is charged with overseeing elections, they're actually conducted by the county clerks or the city. Or the city clerks.
So the city is a separate process.
It's a totally separate process. So we can't quite blame Duran for that. Although, thank you for calling in. We do appreciate the opportunity to make that distinction. Guests, as we're kind of wrapping up here, I want to ask you all, if you think there will be lasting consequences of this, does the governor stand to lose some credibility or some of her shine from this? Or are we going to remember this as a human tragedy, a story of one person with a flaw, you know, who was just simply human and made mistakes? Let me go to you first, Steve.
Well, yeah, people are going to remember this as you know, consequence of Diana Duran's gambling. If that indeed is what it is here. Political consequences. I think the governor was smart in, you know, I said in my column last week, I knew Diana Duran was cooked when I read Susana Martinez's response to the charges, which wasn't, here's this crazy Democrat attorney general, you know, trying to persecute Republicans. It was, no, we need to take this seriously, and no one's above the law. And I said, ooh, that's not a good sign for Diana. And so I think, you know, unless there's any evidence that Martinez is responsible for this, he won't personally suffer that much.
Thank you, Steve. And thank you to Christine Sieta, a retired political science professor from UNM, former state Republican Representative Janice Arnold Jones, and Walt Rubel of the Las Cruces Sun News. There is a podcast of the KUNM Call-In Show. You can find it on iTunes, or you can share the link once we've posted the audio on our website. You can also find previous shows at KUNM.org. Email comments about today's show to callinshow@KUNM.org. Find us on Facebook, look for KUNM Radio, or follow the newsroom on Twitter @KUNM News. Thanks to Jefferson White, our engineer today, Kaveh Movahed, and intern Anna Landy. Screened your calls, Allison Giron. Assisted with production today, Elaine Baumgartel is our executive producer, and I'm your host, Gwyneth Dolan.